This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Breaking news this hour, with just two dissenting votes, the Supreme Court is allowing the Trump administration to fully enforce a ban on travel to the United States by residents of six mostly Muslim countries. Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson is here to unpack the significance of this decision and to give us an update on the tax reform measure that passed the Senate in the wee hours of Saturday morning. Also, what does the information surrounding the guilty plea of former General Michael Flynn and the Trump-Russia investigation tell us about the broader investigation? Daniel Flynn, editor of Breitbart News, is here with the answer. And speaking of the Supreme Court, tomorrow is a significant day for religious liberty here in America as Colorado baker Jack Phillips will get his day in court. The director of FRC's Center for Religious Liberty, Travis Weber, is here to explain that case. All right, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T Perkins, you can keep up with me on what's happening at T Perkins. All right, hey, I want to thank all of you that have called in and taken advantage of the year-end matching challenge that we have through the end of December. You know, everybody, big month, but oftentimes people forget about the nonprofit organizations such as the Family Research Council. This program is brought to you through the donations of folks like you from across the country. And during the month of December, any amount you donate to FRC receives a matching gift from a generous donor. Your gift supports all of our efforts, including bringing you this radio program each and every day. Now, you can make a donation by going to TonyPerkins.com, or right now during this program, you can call 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. We've got some of my team here standing by to take your phone calls so that you can partner with us and keep this program going strong into 2018. Again, that number, 800-225-4008. And to all of you who have partnered with us in this way to bring you Washington Watch, I say thank you and Merry Christmas. All right, hours ago, the Supreme Court issued an order allowing the travel ban put in place by the Trump administration, which is being challenged in the lower courts. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals is hearing it, the Ninth Circuit. But they're allowing it to go into effect until this makes its way through the process. Joining us now to talk about this, Congressman Mike Johnson represents Louisiana's 4th Congressional District. He serves as a member on the House Judiciary Committee, and he also serves as a member of the Subcommittee on Immigration and Border Security. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Great to be with you, as always.
Yeah, welcome back to D.C. I know you're just getting off a plane landing here, and wanted to get your thoughts because, I mean, obviously this is an area of jurisdiction your committee has over, but it's also a constitutional issue, which you're quite familiar with.
It is indeed. I was on a flight for the last hour and a half, and I'll tell you what, the world changes. The news breaks so fast these days. I'm just absorbing this as I've gotten off the plane, but it's certainly a great day. Look, we've made the point all along that carefully vetting any person entering our country from areas known to be terrorist strongholds, it shouldn't be controversial at all. It's just common sense. I mean, we're protecting the homeland as a critical right of any sovereign nation, and I'm so delighted that the big majority of the Supreme Court has seen fit to uphold this order. It just makes sense. It's going to keep the nation safe.
And historically, the courts have been very deferential to the executive office when it comes to the issue of immigration, because that clearly is something that falls to the president, because, as you just pointed out, it's a national security issue. And I think when you look at this decision today by the court, again, it's simply allowing the enforcement to go into effect until it makes its way through the court system. But only two justices did not agree with that. And so I think that's quite significant when you have a court that's so evenly split almost on almost everything that you have only two in this case Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor were the only two that didn't go along with it.
That's right, because this one is an easy call. This is not a marginal call at all. Look, the Constitution is very clear. The president is the commander in chief, and among his principal responsibilities is keeping the people safe, keeping the nation safe. He is privy to the highest classified information, a top secret information that informs his decisions. He has a bright military advisors around him, people who know this business better than anyone. And they are on the wall, so to speak, Tony, keeping watch all the time, and they know where the threats are. But look, this is one that virtually every American can attest to. Everyone recognizes the importance of this one. You're talking about adding another layer, a very careful vetting of persons coming from nations that are known terrorist strongholds. I mean, we're talking about North Korea and Libya and Iran. I mean, nations like that we know pose a direct and serious threat to the American people. This is something the president must do. It's something he should have done, and I'm so grateful the court recognizes that.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Congressman Mike Johnson represents the 4th Congressional District of Louisiana, talking about breaking news out of the Supreme Court today. The court allowing the travel ban by the Trump administration to go into effect. Now, Mike, this coming week, we're going to see oral arguments, or we're going to see both the Ninth Circuit and the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals are going to be holding arguments this week on the travel ban. This would suggest that we're probably going to look at an outcome where you're going to have the Fourth Circuit probably siding with the president, the Ninth Circuit not. So you're going to have a split, or you're going to have a competing opinion. So most likely, is this going to make its way to the Supreme Court?
It certainly seems that way. As you know, when you have a circuit split, that makes a case very probable for Supreme Court review. Certainly, when you have an issue that's of this great importance to the nation and its people. So I think you're right. I think many of us guess that the Ninth Circuit will go the wrong way on this, as they are apt to do. The Fourth Circuit, I would expect, will get it right, and then you have a circuit split, and it will wind up in the laps of the court. I do agree that this is an important signal that we got today, that at least a majority, at least at this stage, recognizes that this one is an easy call, that the president has the responsibility, the constitutional authority to issue the executive order. It is not targeted at any particular persons other than terrorists, and that's exactly what where our attention should be. I think it'll pass constitutional muster, and it will keep the homeland safe.
I mean, you can't read too much into this decision today, simply allowing the ban to go into effect while the appellate court does its work. But it would suggest to me, with only two justices not agreeing to that if this ban this current iteration of the ban lands before the nation's highest court, that it actually might find a favorable hearing.
I think so. You know, I spent 20 years in federal courts litigating constitutional law cases, and you know, when an injunction is sought, when you know a TRO or a temporary restraining order is sought, and the court does not see fit to issue it, it always bodes well for those defending the law that's being challenged, or in this case, the executive order. So, you're right. We can't read too much into it, but my gut is that this one would ultimately be upheld, and I certainly hope that's true. We live in a very dangerous time. And, you know, as members of Congress, we're privy to these top secret briefings. Look, you cannot take these threats too seriously. By God's grace, we have been spared a, you know, large-scale terrorist attack on our soil like we had on 9/11. But part of the reason we've been able to prevent those great tragedies on that scale is because we have the careful vetting of those who are coming into the country who seek to do us harm. This is a part of that. It's one component of our national security, and it's one that we need to uphold.
Well, certainly this is good news to President Trump, as he has taken some lumps over his travel ban in the press and by the courts. But this comes on the heels of another victory, and that was in the wee hours of Saturday morning, the United States Senate finally agreeing to a measure that would reform America's tax system. first time in over 30 years. Now the two bills, very different in the House than from the Senate, those two come together, and sometime possibly this week or next, we'll see some kind of compromise emerge. Are you optimistic?
I am very optimistic, and I've been saying this for months. I believe that this would happen, and it would be, as I said on several programs weeks ago, this would be the largest Christmas present to the American people in over 30 years. I think we're going to get it done before the end of this year, and it's going to be a great gift to begin January 1 to really be a turbo boost to our economy. I don't have any doubt that in the conference committee that I'm sure we'll all vote to affirm that the differences, the minor differences, relatively minor differences between the House and Senate versions will be worked out, because I think that people recognize how important this will be to the American people. We're going to get this one over the line, and it's going to be a great victory.
The vote in the Senate, 51-49, with Republican Bob Corker of Tennessee, the only member of the GOP to side with the Democrats in opposition. Like the House bill, the Senate bill nearly doubles the standard deduction level to $12,000 for individuals. That's up from about $6,350, and $24,000 for couples. That's up from $12,700. Also, the child tax credit is in there. One thing that is missing, Congressman Johnson, is the Johnson Amendment, not to be confused with you, but Lyndon Johnson, that tried to silence churches. And, of course, you were one of the key co-sponsors of that bill in the House. Is that going to be in conference?
I genuinely believe that it will be included. I've spent a great amount of time over the last several weeks talking with Chairman Kevin Brady on the House Ways and Means Committee and those who are likely to be serving on that conference committee. I believe we have a real agreement there of the necessity of that. We were delighted to have it included in the House version, disappointed it did not make it into the Senate version, but I think at the end of the day we'll be able to have that included. I certainly hope that's true, and look, I'll issue it as a prayer request this evening on your program that we need to get that one over the line, because it will right a wrong that has been in the tax code since the 1950s, an unconstitutional measure, and I think the day has come to correct it.
One last question for you, Mike Johnson. What's the time frame here? What are we looking at?
We're going to find out that very soon. I'm literally in bumper-to-bumper traffic on the interstate trying to get back to the Capitol right now. There'll be meetings tonight, some strategy sessions and updates of things that happened over the last 24 hours, and we'll be given an expected timetable of what the vote schedule and everything looks like for the rest of the week. I believe, at least on the House side, everyone's committed to moving this quickly and getting it done. I think the president's anxious to get it on his desk, and I hope we can accommodate it.
I think you're right. Well, I hope you can get through that traffic. The Freedom Caucus is meeting. You're going to be late. Mike Johnson, right. Always great to have you on the program, my friend. Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana. Check it out. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. And during the break, you can call and make your matching gift, 800-225-4008. When we come back, what do we know about the Trump-Russia investigation? Where is this heading? We're going to talk about it with Breitbart editor Daniel Flynn when we come back. Don't go away.
This Christmas season, give with purpose and meaning, a gift that protects life, marriage, and religious liberty. At Family Research Council, our mission is to promote these three core values in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. We are working to ensure that our religious liberty is defended in the public square, that human life at all stages is protected, and that family values are promoted in our country's public policies. Your giving can make an eternal difference for your community and for our future generations. And if you give between now and December 31st to Family Research Council, your gift will be matched, meaning it will be doubled by a generous donor. And any donation is tax deductible. Give with purpose this Christmas season. Text FRC to 444-999. Again, that is text FRC to 444-999. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year. Having a hard time finding that right gift for your family and friends? Need some ideas? Check out Family Research Council's online store and browse the latest books, mugs, trendy t-shirts, baby bibs, tote bags, and more. Your purchase of these items will support FRC and our mission to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Some of our exclusive items include a unique in-house design DC t-shirt featuring a skyline of the monuments in our nation's capital, a cute baby bib with some pro-life flair, and a stylish tote bag with a Bible verse from 1 John 4:19 that says, "We love because He first loved us." Go to frc.org/store now to start shopping. Again, that is frc.org/store. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. All right, recent documents outlining Michael Flynn's guilty plea in the Trump-Russia investigation do not allege collusion or conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russia to influence the 2016 election. They do, however, suggest that the Obama Justice Department was intensely interested in Flynn's discussions with the Russian ambassador. More information coming forward showing that even the FBI, top agents involved in this investigation early, were strongly in the anti-Trump political category and were open about their views. With us now to discuss this is Daniel Flynn, editor at Breitbart News and author of several books like Conservative History of the American Left. Daniel, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thank you for having me.
You know, we're finding out more information now with former General Flynn making a guilty plea in this case for lying to an FBI agent. The documentation is suggesting that it doesn't look like they have a whole lot when it comes to this theory of collusion and working with the Russians to try to change the outcome of the election.
Sure. Obviously, Flynn's interactions with the Russians that were alleged and took place after the election. So obviously, there can't be any collusion there. And it's kind of standard operating procedure for incoming administrations to contact foreign governments when they are in the process of becoming the becoming the administration. If you remember back in 2008 when Obama was running for president, he wasn't even president-elect at the time, there's a guy by the name of Michael McFaul who was an advisor to the campaign, and he was later the ambassador to Russia under Obama. He traveled to Moscow during the presidential race, and he was he had meetings with Russian officials. So if you're going to start imposing the Logan Act on Michael Flynn and Trump administration people, we're going to be throwing a lot of people in prison because this has been the standard operating procedure in Washington for years. It certainly dates back to the Obama administration, and you can find antecedents to what Flynn did, contacting foreign governments, as an incoming administration, in almost every administration that has come into office.
Well, I mean, you've got to get, can't just wait. You can't just wait until January 20th and then, when you take office and be on a sprint at that point. I mean, there's got to be a buildup. That's why we have transitions. But let's talk about it. You mentioned this. This has been the center of discussion. I want you to explain this to our listeners because a lot of discussion about the Logan Act. What is that?
Logan Act was passed in 1799 in the administration of John Adams. And if you remember history, the whole sort of Alien and Sedition Acts and all that period where people were upset that there were Americans contacting the French and basically undermining John Adams' position, which was pro-Britain and sort of anti-French. And Jefferson, who became president after Adams, he was more pro-French. And so because of this climate, and Adams didn't care for the fact that there were people undermining his position overseas, they passed the Logan Act. And the Logan Act basically said that no American citizen could engage in correspondence or any sort of interaction with foreign governments that would undermine the position of the current administration. Now, in the subsequent 218 years, there has never been a successful prosecution under the Logan Act. There's some question to the constitutionality of the law. So the idea that this would be raised, all of a sudden, this arcane law, it hits a lot of people like, wow, this is very strange that they would use this law to go after Trump's people when the law has really never been used in the 218 years of its history.
Well, it seems like a pretty elastic law that could be stretched to encompass almost anything. So it almost sounds like this is something Congress should revisit, especially now we're in the 21st century and communication by citizens with other countries and even other government leaders in other countries, could be quite frequent.
Yeah, I mean, they already have something in the Constitution that addresses this, and that's the fact that the president is the guy who's in charge of foreign policy. And in the past, when people have attempted to undermine the president with regard to his foreign policy duties, the Logan Act comes up. In 1984, there was this famous Dear Comandante letter that was written by Jim Wright, who was then the majority leader, Lee Hamilton, who was a bigwig foreign policy guy in the Democratic Party, and a number of other Democrats. Stephen Solars was one of them. Edward Boland, whose name you probably recognize with the whole Boland Amendments thing. They wrote a letter, a fawning letter, to the dictator of Nicaragua, Daniel Ortega. They called him Dear Comandante. And they praised him for, almost as if the guy was presiding over a liberal democracy with free speech and free elections. And, of course, nothing like that was going on in Central America. And they noted that they regretted the Reagan administration's support of the Contras in their letter. Now, the Reagan people were very upset, and there was a young congressman, a backbencher, a bomb thrower, if you will, who was really upset about this at the time, and that was Newt Gingrich. And he invoked the Logan Amendment. And at the time, the Washington Post put out an editorial basically ridiculing Newt Gingrich, saying if we were to use the Boland Amendment on these guys, then we'd have to use it on everyone. And, there was a bit of logic to that, but it just, when you look at that editorial 33 years later, it hasn't really aged well, because the Washington Post, they have article after article after article buttressing this idea that the Logan Act should be used against Trump, when they were calling for basically the abolition of this act or that we should ignore it back in 1984. So it's sort of one of these deals like whose ox is being gored. If the Logan Act is being used against your own people, well, it's terrible. It's arcane. It's, it's irrelevant. It's an atavism. And if it's used against the other side, well, we got to uphold the rule of law, that kind of thing.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Daniel Flynn, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to continue to watch this and see where this information leads as it pertains to the Trump-Russia investigation. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Daniel Flynn, editor at Breitbart News. It is interesting how they'll try to use something like this Logan Act now because they can use it against Trump. But when it was their guy, go back to Clinton and beyond, they didn't want to use these things back. I guess it was when Reagan was president. All right. When we come back, Travis Weber joins us to talk about tomorrow's Supreme Court case. Don't go away.
Spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience the rich history and culture of our nation's capital and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day by working to advance family values in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. The internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. Learn more at frc.org/internships.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Okay, tomorrow, the Supreme Court will hear oral arguments in a landmark case that could determine if the First Amendment to the Constitution will continue to protect the freedom of artists who seek to act in a manner consistent with their sincerely held beliefs. In this case, it is the religious beliefs of Jack Phillips, the owner of Masterpiece Cake Shop. And the case is Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission. With us now to discuss the case is Travis Weber. He is the director of the Center for Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council and will be at the court tomorrow. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, what are the major questions that the court will consider here, and how significant is this case when it comes to religious freedom?
Yeah, I mean, there are two questions the court's looking at. One, does the free speech protection of the First Amendment protect Jack Phillips from being forced to speak a message against his conscience here? Does that protection prevent the government from compelling his speech to celebrate a same-sex wedding? The second question is, does the free exercise clause of the First Amendment protect him from a law which Colorado has applied in a manner targeting religious belief? Under the Smith precedent, if a law is neutral and generally applicable, then it undergoes a lower level of scrutiny. Here, Jack is arguing this law is not actually neutral in how it's applied to him by Colorado, and therefore the free exercise right that he's advancing deserves more scrutiny. So those are the two legal questions the court's going to be looking at, but obviously the case has much wider implications.
So how significant of a case is this when you look at religious liberty in this country? And, you know, the courts take a case here and they take a case there. We had a public prayer case in the last few years where a city council opened in prayer. So how significant of a case could this be?
Yeah, this one's very significant because it's the first case post Obergefell in the era after the Supreme Court has constitutionalized same-sex marriage and declared that to be a constitutional right. The first case in that era in which the religious freedom rights under the First Amendment are coming into conflict with a government regime which approves of, which gives its sign-off to same-sex marriage. Now, here you have a state sexual orientation non-discrimination law, but the issue was the fact that these men were requesting cake for their same-sex wedding ceremony. So same-sex marriage is the underlying issue driving the conflict, although on the surface it's between sexual orientation and religious freedom. And that's the conflict which is significant for all of us, because we're not only seeing it in wedding vendor situations, but in situations involving other small business owners, Christians in the public square, in public office, public, those dealing with the government in terms of getting grants, contracts, tax-exempt status from the government. In all these areas, you have conflicts between religious beliefs about same-sex marriage and the government's now constitutionalization of that same-sex marriage. And, you know, that's the paradigm for Jack Phillips here in the wedding context, but it's going to affect all those people and many more throughout our country.
Travis Weber, what we see here, though, I think that makes it so significant and why it's gotten all the way to the Supreme Court, is that you have the government, in this case Colorado, the Civil Rights Commission, taking sides here. You have a constitutional freedom enumerated, the freedom of religion, freedom of expression, free speech, as you said. Is he being forced to speak a message that is contrary to his rights of conscience? And then you have a court-created right of same-sex marriage, but then you have government taking a position in favor of that court-created right against a clearly established constitutional right.
Exactly. Well, you know, you have a state law in Colorado that prohibits sexual orientation discrimination. Now, you know, the first part of this whole situation you have to look at is what Jack actually did. And he was not quizzing people on how they identified when they came into his shop. He was happy to provide them with whatever they wanted, just didn't want to be part of this celebratory message. So, you know, the analysis that the state goofed up the analysis at that level, right? But you're correct in terms of them ultimately deciding to stomp on religious freedom, which is clearly stated in the First Amendment, in the name of a same-sex marriage right, which is not stated. And this is a point the Wall Street Journal, in an editorial board piece siding with Jack Phillips, I think it was today, emphasized at the end of the piece. Look, this is a clearly stated right. And this is why you see a lot of people coming alongside of Jack. I mean, you have libertarian scholars, law professors, you don't normally may not even agree with the same-sex marriage. They may agree that same-sex marriage should be legalized, but they actually side with Jack here because they see freedom being taken away. And you had a lot of great briefs on Jack's side here.
Hey, we're up against a break. Travis, can you hold on? Because I got a couple more questions for you I want to ask you on the other side of the break.
Sure thing. Absolutely.
All right, folks, don't go away. Stick around. Travis Weber is going to join us on the other side of the break. I want to ask you about tomorrow's court hearing. And then I want to get a couple calls. I'm going to open up the phone lines and hear from you on this Monday afternoon. So don't go away. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com, and make that pledge to support us and that matching grant that's out there. All right, don't go away. We're coming back right after this.
Are you interested in making a real impact in public policy and culture? And are you looking for an internship experience at a Christian organization in the heart of our nation's capital? If the answer is yes, spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience our country's rich history and culture and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day. Further, you will develop the skills required to advance faith, family, and freedom in our nation. Family Research Council's internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. As an intern, you will gain an invaluable public policy experience in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. Learn more about the FRC internship program at frc.org/internships. Again, that is frc.org/internships.
Having a hard time finding that right gift for your family and friends? Need some ideas? Check out Family Research Council's online store and browse the latest books, mugs, trendy t-shirts, baby bibs, tote bags, and more. Your purchase of these items will support FRC and our mission to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Some of our exclusive items include a unique in-house design DC t-shirt featuring a skyline of the monuments in our nation's capital, a cute baby bib with some pro-life flair, and a stylish tote bag with a Bible verse from 1 John 4:19 that says, "We love because He first loved us." Go to frc.org/store now to start shopping. Again, that is frc.org/store. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again with candy cane.
Welcome back and Merry Christmas. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Now, that was not me singing. All right, Travis Weber holding on here. I want to get back to Travis. But here, I'm going to open up the phone lines here in just a moment. A lot of topics today, talking about the Supreme Court's decision on the travel ban. We got the tax reform. We've got tomorrow's case with Jack Phillips before the Supreme Court. A lot of things happening, so let's talk about it. Give me a call, 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Are you glad the Supreme Court is allowing the president's travel ban to go into place? What are you hoping to see from tax reform? You want to see Congress act, get this thing across the line? And tomorrow, Jack Phillips, his case before the United States Supreme Court. Travis, so what do we expect tomorrow? What's going to happen tomorrow at the Supreme Court here in Washington?
Well, you're going to have oral argument. Each side gets to present their case. Now, most of the arguments have already been submitted in written form on the briefs, and the justices and the clerks will have been familiar with them and understand them. So this is a chance for the justices to clarify concerns or things in their mind and ask questions. Some of that is posturing, letting other justices know where they stand, and they know this gets out into the press. But then they're going to consider the case over the upcoming months and issue a decision before next June sometime. It could be any time before that, sometime probably in the spring, we can expect a decision in the case. But tomorrow, oral argument, we're also going to have a rally. I know you're going to be there speaking, and I'm going to be listening to the argument in the court and join everyone when I get out. So there's a lot of activity down at the court tomorrow.
How long will those oral arguments last?
2 hours approximately. I mean, there's always a little bit of time in there, depending on that leeway, depending on whether a party finishes a question near the end of the segment or something like that. But you basically, that's the each side gets an hour to present their case, and the government actually is arguing, entering argument on the side of Jack Phillips in this case. So it's very significant to have the DOJ doing that.
A big change from what we saw, in the previous administration.
Indeed, and let's not forget that the DOJ under President Obama was cause for concern in this precise area when Solicitor General Verrilli said that religious schools could lose tax-exempt status if they wanted to stick with their beliefs on marriage. That prompted a lot of concern, you know, across the board in all sorts of religious freedom conflict or potential conflicts, such as this one for Jack Phillips in the wedding vendor context. So it's great to see the DOJ now abandoning that position, which was really quite harsh with respect to a lot of folks throughout America.
Elections have consequences. Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Look forward to seeing you at the court tomorrow.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, Travis Weber, the director for FRC's Center for Religious Liberty. 866-372-7234, the number to get in on the conversation this afternoon. And we're going to go straight to Kansas, where Mary is on the line. Mary, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. I just wanted to let you know that I feel like your program is the only one that truly lets the public know what's going on in Washington. So I want to thank you and your staff. But
well,
I also want to say the people that are trying to stop Trump, President Trump, from helping us, what would they do if all of a sudden there was a terrorist there at their family attacking them? Wouldn't they wish they had supported the president of our United States that we elected to that office to protect us so that our money can flow in a circle, not just one way? And he's just trying to do so much in his term, and that we need to support him. But I thank you for letting us know what's going on.
Well, thank you, Mary. I appreciate that. And thank you. And Merry Christmas. Merry
Bye-bye.
Christmas to you as well. And she's absolutely right. What they would do, those who are complaining about the president standing in the way, if there was an attack, they would blame the president for not keeping them safe, which is exactly what he's trying to do. Now, again, he has to operate within the confines of the Constitution, which, as Congressman Mike Johnson pointed out earlier, the Constitution gives great latitude to the president when it comes to the issue of immigration and, of course, national security, which is what he is doing. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Georgia, where Ken is on the line. Ken, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good afternoon, Mr. Perkins. It's an honor to talk with you, and I appreciate all your work in the front lines for our freedoms, particularly our religious freedoms.
Well, thank you.
I had a comment about, I didn't realize that it was tomorrow about the oral argument, so it will be an urgent matter of prayer. But interestingly, I read a book here a couple of years ago by a Dr. Benjamin Weicker. The title was Worshiping the State, How Liberalism Became Our State Religion. And in one of his last, near end of the book, chapters 15, his title is called Secularization American Style, but he goes back to the Everson case in which, was it Justice Black, changed the word in what the First Amendment talks about, that we shall have a separation between church and state, but the First Amendment doesn't use the word state. It says Congress shall make no law against establishment of a state religion. I'm paraphrasing there and getting him not exactly right, but he says that this monumental court case was the beginning, the slippery slope for our religious freedoms.
Without question, it turned religious freedom on its head, where the burden of proof was always on the government not to infringe upon religious freedom or to in any way prohibit the exercise of it. That's been turned upside down so that if anybody on government property or happens to be a government employee expresses a religious view, all of a sudden, well, that's a violation of the Establishment Clause. So you're absolutely right. We have seen this secularism to become the state religion. And it's not the way it's supposed to be. And we have every right to change laws, to influence, to, in a republic like ours, to come together and shape laws that represent the people. That's why the courts have consistently been used to circumvent the people. I mean, I go back to the whole issue. We're just talking about this Jack Phillips case. And Ken, thank you for reminding us. I want to get this in. Ken said, hey, it's a matter of urgent prayer. So, folks, I would encourage you to be praying Kristen Wagner is going to be one of the attorneys. She's been on this program many times with Alliance Defending Freedom. She's going to be a part of that team tomorrow at the Supreme Court. Be praying for her and the others. But what we have seen is when the court redefined marriage, after a majority of the states had intentionally changed their constitutions to define, to preserve the historic natural definition of marriage, they couldn't do that through the Congress. It was, of course, it wasn't the right of the Congress to do. They couldn't do it through the states. The people weren't going to do it. And so how'd they do it? They did it through the courts. Same thing on abortion. And of course, as I've said many times on the issue of abortion, the reason that's an issue over four decades later is because it runs counter to natural law. Same thing with this redefinition of marriage. They are not going to settle this. And this is why they immediately went to these repressive tactics, like this Jack Phillips, a baker. We've seen florists, photographers, I mean, run out of business, crushed, heavy fines, homes taken, businesses shuttered. Why? They have to have the heavy hand of the state to try to force people to do what is counter to nature. And that's why this case is so important. It's absolutely essential that we uphold our Constitution and the first enumerated freedom of speech and religion. It's right there in the Constitution. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Johnny in Illinois. Johnny, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to get your opinion. Some of my friends and I had been discussing, you know, issues like if a family member, a gay family member, had a wedding, would you go? That sort of thing. Do you see this issue regarding the business in the same light, that maybe we as Christians should not support that wedding, should not go? You know, some have said, well, mm-hmm. it's about love and it's about right. showing, if you show love, you know, then maybe you'll win them. How do you come down on that? Just wanted to get your opinion.
That's a great question, Johnny. First, there's a little bit of distinction, although similar. First off, what we're talking about here in the case of Jack Phillips is the government forcing him to engage in an activity, in this case, expression, artistic expression, which would fall under freedom of speech, actually forcing him to engage in a message that runs counter to his beliefs. Okay, so that's the issue here in this case, is that he's being forced by the government to do something that runs counter to his own deeply held beliefs. So, I mean, where could that end up? If the court can if the government can force you to do something that's against your beliefs, there's no end to that. So that's the case here in the Jack Phillips case. But you bring up a very important question, and it's been debated in many circles, and I know some pastors have taken positions on this that differ with one another. Look, I can only address this from a personal standpoint. I could not attend a gay wedding because, first off, it's not a wedding. I mean, it does not fit the definition of what God defines as a marriage. I'll go a step further. As an ordained pastor, I am selective in the marriages that I do, and they have to be to officiate those weddings. They have to be in line with biblical teaching on marriage, and so that not only is it a man and a woman, but they also have to be. I generally do not marry people who have been married before unless they meet the biblical parameters in which a couple, you know, may have been divorced. So I just think that there are, I get the whole argument about love. We just need to show love. Sometimes expressing love is standing for truth. And I think we could lull people into a false sense of security by simply going along what is culturally acceptable in some circles. And I personally, Johnny, I wouldn't go. Now, I'm not going to tell people across the board you shouldn't go. I haven't gone that far. I would tell people to be very prayerful about it, but I personally, it's not something I could do. I don't think it would be a good representation, people knowing very clearly my stand on biblical truth. And I think other Christians need to bear that in mind as well. Johnny, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening. I'm going to try to work another call here. Let's go to Karen in Missouri real quick. Karen, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. First time I've been on your show.
Well, thanks for calling.
I just have a quick question. It's about Michael Flynn. I'm a little confused by the situation in that from what you said about the Logan Act, it doesn't sound like it's a very strong law to begin with. So then is, why would Michael Flynn lie to the FBI? Because that's really what he's being prosecuted for.
Correct.
So I'm just kind of confused. Why don't people, and you said Obama, his guy did it. So I'm just kind of confused why people are not just saying, hey, we did, you know, and just let the chips fall where they may. So that's it. That's all I ask.
All right, Karen, good. And we're almost out of time, so I'm not going to be able to unpack that. The Logan Act was what the Obama administration began to dig in on, which, again, doesn't make a whole lot of sense given the history of an incoming administration working with foreign governments, you know, to lay the groundwork for future relationships. The issue, you're absolutely correct, the issue was that he pled guilty to lying to the FBI, which, again, is one of those things that I, in some ways, I consider to be like the Logan Act. It is very elastic, and I've seen it used in cases where they can't get somebody on any kind of crime, and so they simply get them in what they call, lying to the FBI. And oftentimes I've seen cases where it has been the person, his word against an FBI agent. And that's troubling to me. Very, very, very troubling. I've seen, you know, in my days in politics back in Louisiana, I've seen some elected officials who they went after them on other things. They couldn't find anything on them, and they ultimately got them on lying to an FBI agent and strong-armed them into pleading guilty. And I think we got to be careful about too much power in the hands of government agents like that. All right, folks, out of time for today. But Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow, and I hope you will as well. Sorry we didn't get to all the phone calls, but hopefully we will tomorrow. In the meantime, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians chapter 6, where he says, when you've done all you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.